guys. How's it going? Wow, it's a pleasure to be here. Such an inspiring opening, standing on the shoulders of giants indeed. So my name is Jason Silva, and I'm a video artist and filmmaker. I'm also in production hosting a new television show for National Geographic. But frankly, I'm here because I love technology. One of my favorite lines about technology was written by a cognitive philosopher called Andy Clark, who says that technology is a scaffolding. It's an exoskeleton that extends our thought, reach, and vision. It's an appendage. It's our extended mind. It's how we outsource our cognition. It's imagination spilling over into the world. One of my favorite lines about the power of imagination is that imagination allows us to conjure up all these delightful future possibilities, pick the most amazing and ecstatic one, and then pull the present forward to meet that possibility. So frankly, I'm in awe of you guys. And I'm here today to share with you my vision of the exciting future that's riding on the back of these exponentially emerging technologies, this future that's being built on the shoulders of the technology that you guys are creating. So about a year ago, I started working on a series of short films. I call them shots of philosophical espresso. And the idea is that they pull you out of context to provide a long view that allows you to engage with the implications of the coevolution of humans and technology in terms of the big picture, right? There's a great line by Tom Robbins who says, "Imagination or wonderment cannot be manufactured. But what you can do is pull people out of context in such a dramatic manner that they are nudged to gawk in astonishment at the ubiquitous everyday wonders that we're culturally disposed to ignore." And there's this great, great line from Terence McKenna that I keep repeating in a lot of my videos because I just think it's so awesome. But he says that from the moment that human beings invented language, okay, biological evolution essentially ceased. And evolution turned into this cultural epigenetic phenomenon, because now we take in matter of low organization, put it through our mental filters, and extrude it in the form of like Windows Server 2012 and the iCloud and the internet and the global brain and jet engines and skyscrapers. And that's what we do. We rearrange things and it comes out as informed by the power of our imagination. So anyway, that's it. I get really excited. I'll slow down as I proceed. But the first video that I want to show you, I actually premiered at the TED Global Conference earlier this year. And it's an ode to the power of ideas. It's like a movie trailer for ideas. And it celebrates the notion of radical openness. Because I think as we move towards this world of interconnectivity, where mind-to-mind communication allows us to transcend the limitations of time, space, and distance, where electrified thoughts travel at the speed of light, we need to cultivate spaces where all of these ideas can intermingle and co-evolve and accelerate the evolutionary process. As Kevin Kelly says, we're on a trajectory smack in the middle between the born and the made. So I'd like to now show you my first video for this afternoon, radical openness. You know, I love this idea of radical openness, the free exchange of information, the free flow of ideas, creating spaces in which ideas can have sex, as Matt Ridley talks about. And this is huge because it turns out that ideas are just as real as the neurons they inhabit, as James Gleick tells us. You know, a new kingdom rises above the biosphere. The denizens of this kingdom are ideas, because ideas have retained some of the properties of organisms, it turns out. They leap from brain to brain. They compete for the limited resources of our attention. They have infectivity. They have spreading power. They are what Richard Dawkins calls the new replicators, born from the primordial soup of human culture. Their vector of transmission is language and electronic communication. And though ideas are not made of nucleic acid, they have achieved more evolutionary change and at a rate that leaves the old gene panting far behind. You know, Ray Kurzweil says our ability to create virtual models in our heads combined with our modest-looking thumbs was sufficient to usher in a secondary force of evolution called technology. And it will continue until the entire universe is at our fingertips. This is unbelievable stuff. It speaks to the telescoping nature of evolutionary change. More change in the last 100 years than in the last billion years. Terence McKenna actually wrote that from the moment that human beings invented language, biological evolution essentially ceased, and evolution became a cultural epigenetic phenomenon. Now, we take in matter of low organization, we put it through our mental filters, and we extrude it in the form of space shuttles and iPhones.
You know, the imaginary foundation tells us that what imagination does is it allows us to conceive of delightful future possibilities, pick the most amazing one, and pull the present forward to meet it. You know, imagine how impoverished this world would have been if we hadn't invented the technology of the oil painting in time for Van Gogh, or the technology of the musical instrument in time for Beethoven and Mozart to unfurl through it, you know, with the revolutions in biotechnology, nanotechnology, the free exchange of information is allowing us to conceive of radical new things. Freeman Dyson says, in the future, new generation of artists will be writing genomes with the fluency that Blake and Byron wrote verses. What is great in man, said Nietzsche, is that he is a bridge and not an end. You know, we're on a trajectory smack in the middle between the born and the made, wrote Kevin Kelly. And so radical openness, it's huge. It's a universe of possibility. It's gray infused by color. It's the invisible revealed. It's the mundane blown away by awe. We need to cultivate radical openness as a way of participating and accelerating evolution. Wow.
Yeah, I get really excited. It's funny because that wow was very spontaneous. It was just in the moment after I kind of came out of that ecstatic state. I was like, oh man, that was crazy. But, you know, the inspiration behind these videos, besides wanting to share a sort of ecstatic, sort of techno-utopian vision of the world that just might be if we sort of leverage these exponentially emerging technologies, it's also an attempt to capture inspiration itself and hold it in stasis, because inspiration can be so fleeting. I mean, the human condition is defined by impermanence, and as an artist, I'm trying to capture that. And the fact that the technology that you create allows me to do that is just total ecstasy for me. Another one of the themes that I talk about a lot in my videos is the notion of exponential growth, the exponential growth curves of technology. You guys understand this better than anybody else, but of course, most people, you know, we have these brains that evolved in a world that was linear and local, but of course, now we live in a world that is global and exponential. You know, Ray Kurzweil famously says that the smartphones in our pockets today are a million times cheaper, a million times smaller, and 1,000 times more powerful than a $60 million supercomputer that was half a building in Stanford 40 years ago. So that's the kind of progression that we're making. Now imagine when we merge computers and biology, it'll be like Freeman Dyson says, a near future where a new generation of artists is writing genomes with the fluency that Shakespeare used to write verses. So this world that's piggybacking, this technology that's bootstrapping on its own complexity, runs counterintuitive to the way that we make these normal linear projections with these antiquated brains that we have. Just to explain exponential growth for those that don't totally know about it, but linear growth, you take 30 steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 30 steps later, you're at 30. Exponential growth, those same 30 steps, 2, 4, 8, 16, same 30 steps, you get to a billion. That's the difference. You know, it's like there's a great line that says there are decades where nothing happens and there are weeks when decades happen. And I think on the back of these exponentially emerging technologies, we're going to have more and more of that. We're going to have weeks when centuries happen in terms of progress. And I think that that's really exciting. Something else that comes up a lot is that people ask me, yeah, don't you think, though, that we're going to destroy ourselves with our technologies? You know, there's global warming and there's pollution and there's all this waste and yada, yada. And what I tell people is that, you know, we have, again, Peter Diamandis, the founder of the XPRIZE Foundation, has this great talk where he explains that we have these overactive amygdalas in our brains that look for danger because that was biologically selected for from back in the day, because it made more sense to look for any threats in order to neutralize such a threat, and that was why we ended up surviving. The problem with today is that it creates a media environment where if it bleeds, it leads, and we're always looking for the bad news in spite of the fact that there is more breakthroughs than ever before. The world is safer than it has ever been. I often point people to the work of Steven Pinker. He has a great TED talk called The Myth of Violence, where he quantifies all the ways in which the world is actually less violent than it's ever been. Ever. The chances of a man dying at the hands of another man are the lowest than they've ever been. Or Matt Ridley's TED talk, When Ideas Have Sex, where he extrapolates some of the notions that he explores in his book, The Rational Optimist. Again, all of these ways in which the world is getting better, not worse. But again, overactive amygdalas, always looking for danger. There's another great superstar. His name's Hans Rosling. He's got this website called Gapminder that went viral because he has this famous animation that shows all the different nations in the world. And over the last 100 years, by every measurable indicator of quality of life, every nation has gone up. But of course, we don't know that, you know, because we're all connected, and so we see all the things that are wrong, but fail to notice all the things that are going right. And so for this next video, I got inspired by David Deutsch's new book, The Beginning of Infinity, particularly by this idea of mind over matter as seen through the lens of technology. He says if you look at the topography of Manhattan, and I go into this in the video, but he says if you look at the topography of Manhattan as it exists today, that topography is one in which mind has trumped geology. Because the topography of Manhattan is shaped by culture, by economics, by technology. The physical shape of Manhattan is shaped more by the decisions that minds make every day than by geology. That's mind over matter. And he calls his book The Beginning of Infinity. I thought it was a great title to borrow for this next video. So let's watch The Beginning of Infinity.
2, 1.
I am very much an optimist. I'm reminded of Rich Doyle's line from Darwin's Pharmacy. He says, dreams do not lack reality. They are real patterns of information. When the Imaginary Foundation says that the role of human imagination is to conceive of all these delightful futures, choose the most amazing and exciting and ecstatic possibility, and then pull the present forward to meet it. That is what we do. We bring our imaginings into existence. But I think that as technology has advanced, we have found ways to outsource our mental capacities to our tools so much more. Our ability to manipulate the physical world has increased in an exponential fashion. So we've been able to shrink the lag time between our imaginings and their instantiation in the real world. David Deutsch speaks in his new book, The Beginning of Infinity. He says, if you look at the topography of the island of Manhattan today, that topography is a topography in which the forces of economics and culture and human intent have trumped the forces of geology. I mean, the topography of Manhattan today is no longer shaped by mere geology. It's shaped by the human mind and by economics and by culture. So what David Deutsch extrapolates is that ultimately that will be the fate of the whole universe. He says gravitation and antimatter might only shape the universe at its earliest and least interesting stages, but eventually the whole entire thing will be subject to the intent of substrate-independent, infinitely more powerful minds. And to conceive of that just, it makes me feel ecstatic.
I was hanging out at TED Global this summer, and I remember it was kind of a trip because Jodie Foster was there. And after she saw my presentation, she had seen some of my videos, she said that I was an obsessive ruminator. And I thought that was really funny because there is this element of like love of contemplation, because contemplation makes me kind of revel in the yen of like what it feels like to apprehend what is happening. And as we move towards this event horizon, or what some have called the singularity, where everything that we know is going to change, I think it's important to kind of meditate on the implications of that, and also to create narratives that are beautiful and not just narratives that are frightening. Because we tend to fear change, right? I mean, even when writing was first invented, I mean, I've actually read many reports that a lot of the intellectuals of the time, even Socrates himself, used to criticize the technology of writing. Because if we wrote things down, it would atrophy our brains because we wouldn't remember anything. So there's always this fear of transformation. But in fact, transformation extends and expands who we are. From the moment, as Ray Kurzweil famously says, from the moment that we picked up a stick on the floor and used that stick to reach a fruit on a higher tree, we've been using our tools to extend who and what we are. And in the same way as when astronauts first saw the Earth from the vantage point of space and they knew that we needed a new story of who and what we were, so too now, on the back of these exponentially expanding technologies, we also need a new story. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do. Just provide these narratives, food for thought, shots of philosophical espresso, as I said. Something else that's turning me on a lot these days is the notion of big data. This gets talked about all the time. And for me, I think big data is an opportunity for tremendous amounts of self-insight. I mean, it's like, this is something that I had to do a video about because it just blew my mind. But have you guys heard about this stuff that the information sharing systems that comprise the internet have the same shapes and they look just like the neurons in the brain, which themselves look like computer models of dark matter in the universe? Or I just read yesterday about the anternet. Stanford researchers found that ants, certain ants, when they harvest for food, the patterns in which they do that mirrors the traffic flows that manage data transfer on the internet, or this other thing in which slime molds, like creating their little nutrient feeding networks, they look exactly like the Tokyo rail subway system, and all these different shapes keep turning up. And with big data, we can measure more than ever before. We can quantify and extrapolate meaning out of more large data subsets than ever before. And what that's giving us, I think, is consciousness expansion, because it's given us all these like astonishing, like, wow, you know, human, you know, behavior patterns that match weather patterns, and Twitter behavior that matches biological rhythms of the human body. And all, it's astonishing. And so there's a great line by Isaiah Berlin. He says, to understand is to perceive patterns. And you guys are probably privy to this stuff all the time, because you connect the dots all the time. I mean, people say creativity is just connecting things. So I'd like to show you that video, which is actually my most popular video online. I think it has like over 250,000 views. This is to understand is to perceive patterns. Understand is to perceive patterns. Now, of course, what this means is that true comprehension comes when the dots are revealed and you get Stephen Johnson's long view and you see the big picture. This is the idea about patterns, recurring patterns across different scales of reality. You know, Paul Stamets talks about the mycelial archetype and how the information sharing systems that comprise the internet look exactly like computer models of dark matter in the universe, look exactly like the neurons in a brain. They all share the same intertwinkled filamental structure. It's the rise of networkism as big data. Advocates talk about how man-made systems are looking exactly like natural systems. The more we can measure, the more we can visualize, the more expands our consciousness by seeing these recurring patterns across scales of reality. It blows my mind. And I think that technology increasingly is becoming an expander of human consciousness. It extends our thought, reach, and vision, and revealing so much more. It's like, whereas once I was blind, now I can see. Jeffrey West from the Santa Fe Institute is telling us that cities are really like organisms, you know, alleys are like capillaries. How is it possible that a man-made artificial technological system is behaving like a natural system? The more efficient it becomes, the more it's starting to look like nature. Really interesting, weird stuff. You know, but it makes me optimistic. It's like when Stephen Johnson says, look, if we can understand all this stuff, we can, I mean, anything becomes possible, right? It's the adjacent possible, standing as a sort of shadow future, a map of all the ways the present can reinvent itself. It's beautiful stuff.
To understand is to perceive patterns. So it's interesting. Like I'm well aware that the presentation style is very unorthodox, but what I tell people is I'm not trying to compete with textbooks or TED Talks or book-length treatises, but what I'm trying to do is provide people with another way in. I'm trying to expand the audiences that can engage with these ideas so that they're not scared of technology, so that they're not scared of the future. And I'm also trying to create transcendent experiences of awe, because I think that awe is sort of an antidote to existential despair. I mean, we're here for a bleep and then we die. But if we're lucky, while we're here, we can create great work. We can stand on the shoulders of giants and improve the world and make our mark and make a dent in the universe. And so I tell people, I'm interested in capturing awe states of awe. And awe is defined as an experience of such perceptual expansion, and I go into it in this next video, any experience of such perceptual vastness that pushes your senses to an extreme that you literally have to upgrade your mental schema to accommodate the experience. So in order for it to fit, you need to rewire how you see the world. That's what awe does. And so a recent study out of Stanford actually said that regular incidences of awe are good for us. They leave us with increased empathy, increased compassion, increased feelings of creativity and well-being, and all sorts of psychological benefits come from blowing our minds every once in a while. Timothy Leary was right. In order to use your head, you've got to go out of your mind. And I thought, well, this is awesome because, you know, my videos are all about awe, but here on a meta level, I can make an awe-inspiring video, hopefully, that actually talks about awe. And so this is actually the concluding video that I'd like to leave you with today, and I'm hoping that, you know, you have felt at least a little bit touched, that some of it has gotten in there and have made you see things in a different way. Because again, it is when we are pulled out of context that we come most alive. My friend Michael Pollan says, in order to see things for the first time, we must remember to forget. And that's a great idea, I think, that we can all follow once in a while. So step out of our comfort zones, see things from a different perspective, and hopefully, you know, we don't have to suffer from that curse that says we have eyes yet see not, ears that hear not, and hearts that neither feel nor understand. We can challenge that. We can awaken the mind's attention from the lethargy of custom and the film of familiarity, and instead see the world with new eyes. And with that, I leave you with the biological advantage of being awestruck.
Eminent psychologist Nicholas Humphrey has written of the biological advantage of being awestruck. How fortuitous, he says, for a species to find that its own ability to contemplate, to marvel at its own existence, has been evolutionarily advantageous. In other words, it has been biologically selected for because it informs our life with a sense of cosmic significance that makes us work harder to persist and to survive. In other words, awe has helped us survive. You know, a recent study out of Stanford on the subject of awe kind of validates this idea. They have found that regular incidences of awe leave residual benefits upon the individual that persist, such as increased feelings of empathy and compassion towards others, increased feelings of altruism, and increased feelings of general well-being. In this study, they defined awe as an experience of such perceptual expansion, such perceptual vastness that you literally have to reconfigure, upgrade your mental schemata just to accommodate, just to take in the scale of the experience. This is amazing. We've all felt this before. The first time we stared upon the Grand Canyon or succumbed to the immersive power of an IMAX film. But perhaps the most exquisite account of the experience of awe was articulated by the brilliant Ross Anderson when writing about the Hubble Space Telescope. Pay attention. He says that the Hubble has given us nothing less than an ontological awakening, a forceful reckoning with what is, allowing us to contemplate space and time on a scale just shy of the infinite. Wild. He says gazing upon the famous deep field photograph literally allows us to mainline the whole of time through the optic nerve. To fit something so impossibly large to something so impossibly small seemed incredible. He says through the sheer aesthetic force of its discoveries, the Hubble distills the impossibly complex abstractions of astrophysics into these singular expressions of color and light, vindicating Keats' famous couplet, "Beauty is truth, truth, beauty."
And that's the biological advantage of being awestruck. And thank you. It really is awe-inducing to consider that an instrument of technology, that technology allows us to mainline the whole of time through the optic nerve, and that's just one little piece of technology, and there are many others, and you guys are making them. So actually, thank you guys, because you guys make it all possible. I'm just celebrating what's made possible by you. Thank you so much for having me, and now, my friends, it's a very exciting moment because technology is obviously transforming everything we thought we knew about reality. Earlier, before my talk, you guys saw the origins of modern music. Now, I'd like you to meet the next generation. This is mind-blowing. Please meet the brilliant Chris Vick.
Technology extends our thought reach and vision.
Technology extends our thought reach and vision.
Technology extends our thought, reach, and vision.
Thank you. conductor, another round of applause. What an amazing way to MC the show. G'day, I'm Coatsy, or Andrew Coates.
And I'm Macca, or Andrew McMurray. And this is our team.
So this is DPE, this is Developer and Platform Evangelism. And as evangelists, we have the best view in the world. We get to see the most amazing technology get made at our company, but more importantly, we get to see what you do with it. We all get to see further because the best technology stack is there and you guys build on top of it. But standing on great tech is really important, but I want to make sure that you understand the context of today. It's not about new stuff necessarily. It's about taking what's there and building on top of it. The guys at Fairlight, that was decades ago, but they completely revolutionized the music industry and they continue to do so today. The guys at Bungie, two guys, did something profoundly important. They built an entirely new universe. And in that universe, over 240,000 game years have been played. It blows my mind.
And as Jason told us before, time from idea to creation is shorter than ever. And in that spirit, we wanted to share some stories with you.
Okay, so this is Chris Shanahan. 3 years ago, let's just say Chris wasn't enjoying his job very much. He was a bit of a geek, he was working in a geeky kind of job, but it wasn't his passion. So he downloaded and started playing with some of our tools, and in particular, in this case, it was the Windows Phone 7 SDK. After only a couple of months, he built his first application. And some of you may already have it on your phone. It's called Wheel of Wealth. If you don't already have it, grab it right now. It's an awesome, awesome app. Chris had found his passion, and he's now full-time in his own company, Shantech Studios, and his apps, more than one app now, many apps, have had over 240,000 downloads. His time from idea to creation was almost nothing.
In actual fact, Chris is here in the room with us now, and if you're interested in finding out more about what he did and how that's helped him, go and check him out down at the Nokia stand when you're at the showcase later on. What he's done with Windows Phone 7 and our dev tools has completely changed his life. Now, this is Colin Marshall. Colin Marshall works at Zettergrid in WA, and Zettergrid are a cloud hosting services provider. And a bit over a year ago, he had an idea to build a private cloud on Microsoft technology that his company could use to improve other customers' business. He got in touch with our product teams, he started working directly with the Windows Server guys, and a little over a year later, he built this private cloud, which has saved his company an absolute ton in operational expenditure, and this has been passed down to their customers.
Yeah, but perhaps more importantly, Colin is now a hero at his work, and in fact, so much so that they've created a brand new role for him. Colin is now the cloud services architect at Zettergrid. His investment in the world's best technology has really taken him from idea to amazing. This is what it's all about. It's about you. This is Hon. Hon is a final year medical student, so we can show you his face. Like Jason said, the goal of human imagination is to conjure up delightful future possibilities. Now, I love this concept. What we do with our minds is conjure up delightful future possibilities and then move towards them. That's exactly what Hon did. Hon, as a medical student, had a vision, and he'd seen in his work as a student the effects of childhood pneumonia. 1.3 million children die every year of childhood pneumonia, a completely preventable disease. Antibiotics cures it almost immediately. So Hon had an idea, and he built a digital stethoscope for about $30, and he plugged it into a Windows phone. He buddied up with some computer science students who found the expertise to build some fairly complex signal processing stuff and hosted it up on Azure.
But the really cool thing here is, like, 2 months later after this is around June this year, they entered and they won the Imagine Cup finals in Melbourne. Awesome.
Yeah, incredible stuff.
Now, this is Jude. Jude's a senior manager at Barnardo's Australia, and she was previously a caseworker. Now, for those of you that don't know, Barnardo's Australia is a charity that helps in disaffected youth and youth without homes, with homeless youth. And one of the things that we see when dealing with these types of cases is the databases that people use to keep track of these kids are all over the place. Loads of databases everywhere, absolutely no connectivity between them. It's almost like just, you know, completely amorphous filing cabinets worth of stuff. And quite a while ago, Jude started working with a kid. She added him to her version of the database. And the kid basically said, look, I know I've got a brother. There's a brother out there somewhere. I don't know where he is. I don't even know his name. This is a fairly big thing. So Barnardo's, with the help of one of our big partners, Redify, actually got a system built called My Story. And My Story was all about taking all of these disconnected and disparate databases and running some pretty impossibly complex logic across them to basically bring them all together. So think of what Jason was talking about before when it came to the Hubble telescope. Using the power of Azure, Barnardo's did basically just that. They took all of the different disparate databases, brought them all together into one amorphous mass to build a profile out of each child.
Yeah, and the cool thing about the end of that story is that after they had done that, they ran this initial kid through the database and they found his brother. Imagine that. You have turned something from nothing into completely altering people's lives by standing on the shoulders of Azure. From idea to that in absolutely no time, Barnardo's, Redify, and Azure have changed these kids' lives. So, this is Chris Vick. You saw Chris up here a moment ago, also known as Ethnotech. Chris is a musician and an artist. And 2 years ago, he discovered that Kinect could turn his body into an instrument. It took his career to brand new heights. So he's appeared in The Age and The Verge and The Atlantic. Chris has been flown to the Seattle Science Festival to perform there. He's controlled the organ in the Melbourne Town Hall just using a Kinect, which is very, very cool stuff. And he now enjoys a thriving, and what I'd have to probably say is an absurdly creative career. He has really found his passion. He took his unique skills, which aren't even technical. His unique skills are musical and choreographical. And he built from these, on a really strong foundation, the platform, to make something that was uniquely him.
The thing is, though, man, that, well, he knows what we already know and what everyone in the room already knows, right? Use the best tools and the best platform and your imagination's the limit.
Awesome.
Now, before we started the keynote today, we met a whole bunch of people that are standing on the shoulders of giants. And I just want to call out one guy in the audience, Adam Bell. I don't know if you're here and I can't see you even if you put your hand up. But Adam's a really great bloke, and he has taken a single idea, taken that to a single infrastructure, a single design, and basically has built up a system which allows him to manage tens of thousands of devices across his entire state, just with one guy.
That's incredible, man. And so I want to tell you another story about someone who's probably here in the crowd today. Yesterday we started the App Fest, and the App Fest was a 24-hour hackathon where people could come and build a Windows 8 app and have it mentored and developed over that time. And the winner of that App Fest had never actually written any computer code before. This is an amazingly true story. What happened was he went in, built a team, had a vision, had an idea, brought people together, and harnessed the platform. We've got an amazing platform. So here's the thing, guys. Both of you get a Halo 4 Xbox, which is coming out on the 6th of November. This is a brand new console that's coming out then, and it'll be a lot of fun. It's our pleasure to give it to you to acknowledge the amazing work almost on behalf of everybody that you do. Thank you. This is Fabian. Fabian is works at domain.com.au, and a couple of years ago, just in his spare time, he picked up the Windows Phone SDK and built a prototype of the Windows Phone, of the domain.com.au site on Windows Phone. It took him a total of 2 weeks. Well, we noticed it, and more importantly, perhaps his bosses noticed it, and 5 weeks later, that was a fully-fledged application in the marketplace for domain.com.au. Fabian's one of those guys who didn't just have an idea, but he actually rapidly built on it, and that he could build on it because he had this platform. From idea to creation, it's really faster than ever. And obviously, Fabian knows that Microsoft is the best place for him to do this.
And the really cool thing now is Fabian runs the entire dev team at Domain.
Exactly.
Great story.
Very cool.
This is Dr. Stuart Smith. Now, Dr. Stuart Smith's not a developer at all, and neither is he an IT professional. He's a researcher at Neuroscience Research Australia, and one of the challenges he had was with residents in aged care facilities to help them exercise properly. So what he did is he started getting into the idea of using video games on Kinect to help these people start moving, start exercising, and basically get to a point where they actually wanted to exercise and keep themselves moving. It's really amazing because a lot of these people didn't even know that they were capable of lifting their arms over their heads. And by being able to interact with the Kinect, they could actually see what they were capable of doing. Actually, a lot more than what they initially realised.
That's awesome. And the amazing thing is that Stuart's research has been published in a bunch of peer-reviewed papers, and they've shown remarkable reduction in the number of falls, increase in quality of life for aged care residents who participate in these programs. A simple thing like identifying a platform to stand on and taking your idea and pushing it forward has completely changed the lives of a whole bunch of people. It's like this, guys, all right? The people in our stories aren't any different from you. They had when they started exactly what you have now, access to the platform and the potential for ideas. They were the difference. They just did it. Right? You're here because you're on the top of your game. That's why you're here. The question is, what are you going to do about it? Jason talked about the concept of the mind shaping the geology of the topography of Manhattan. What are you going to shape? You're only bound by your imagination.
And here's the thing. Technology is not the limiting factor. This week, it's not about your boss. It's not even about your job. It's about you. You are the difference. Yeah. No matter what the technology, this week is all about dreaming bigger than you've ever dreamed before.
So I just want to take you back and think back to the bungee guys. They started off, they met each other, they had an idea, and the ideas sparked from each other, and they built this amazing world. Now, there are 3,000 almost of you, like-minded geeks. Turn to the people next to you, connect. Think about where the sparks could fly, because that could be the next big thing that happens.
And think about the way you might want to connect with each other. So for those of you that are digitally inclined, at AU TechEd. Now, Windows Server has got a little bit of a surprise for us. They're going to be providing helicopter rides. Yeah. Helicopter rides for certain types of tweets. 2 every hour for certain tweets that mention a certain structure.
So what you've got to do is follow AU TechEd.
Absolutely.
And if you follow AU TechEd on the Twitter stream, you'll find out how to potentially win a bunch of helicopter rides. So listen, be inspired. Spark your imagination. Go to the showcase and see all the amazing things that are on the expo hall floor. Talk to the people in the community lounge. Talk to the exhibitors and the other people there. It's an amazing time to be in technology.
And don't forget things like Hyped on Thursday. Don't forget the welcome party that's coming up in just a moment. And don't also forget the Women in IT lunch.
All right.
All opportunities to connect.
Absolutely. Now, all this stuff, of course, is in your conference guides. Take a chance to have a look at it. And the other thing we'd love you to do is do your evals. And there's 2 reasons we think you should do your evals. The first is we're giving away cool stuff. So every day, every time you fill in an eval for your for a session, you have an opportunity to win 1 of 5 a day of these awesome mice. And then when you fill in your overall feedback, we've got a heap of great prizes around Illumia phones and a heap of other cool things. But more importantly with the eval, it is about you. Because every year we pour through the evals we get back. And each year as we're planning TechEd, we look back and see what people said and what could we do better. So if you want TechEd to be a better event every single year, fill the evals in and tell us what you want us to do. Tell us what we're doing well. Tell us what we could do better. And we'll try and make TechEd the best it possibly can be.
So guys, do something. You are the difference. There's no time like the present.
So build the app.
Deploy that service.
Make some serious money.
Progress your career.
Look, it's a big opportunity that sits here before you. Standing on the amazing technology you already have, you can build almost anything.
But most of all, have fun. TechEd 2012 is now open.
Cheers, guys.
Make the most of it. See ya.